This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The issue of unilateral conversion is back in the headlines after the government decided to withdraw the Law Reform Marriage and Divorce Amendment Act 2016, which was aimed at resolving conflicts arising from interfaith custody battles between Muslim and non-Muslim parents. One of the more high-profile cases of this was that of Indira Gandhi, a Hindu mother whose ex-husband converted to Islam and who then also converted their children with neither Indira nor the children's consent. Filmmaker Nurhayati Kaprawi has made a short documentary about this case called Diary for Prasanna, which will be screened at the upcoming Freedom Film Festival early next month. She joins me now to tell us more about the film. Welcome, Yati. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Yati. So the last time, actually, you and I caught up on The Bigger Picture was back in 2011, and that was actually to discuss your film, Aku Siapa. Maybe you could just remind us about that film and, you know, I guess tell us what got you interested in the field of documentary and filmmaking.
I was working as an activist in an NGO last time in Sisters in Islam. Mm-hmm. So I did advocacy work, for which we did, you know, workshops and forums. And I mean, doing workshops and conducting workshops is fantastic. You got the very direct interaction with the participants. But then I thought, like, you know, it's such a pity sometimes that the discussion is limited to only a particular number of participants or audience. Mm-hmm. Whereas sometimes the discussions are, you know, like we have a very vibrant discussion on certain issues. So that's what I thought, like, you know, these days people like to watch movies and, you know, audiovisual. So that's what made me explore into audiovisual, yeah. And documentary was the platform that I used.
Did you have any formal training on it, or is it something you just kind of learned on the go?
No, I didn't. I was very fortunate that two Indonesian friends came over and helped me out with my first documentary, which was about Kartika issue, about the whipping.
Yes, the lady who was
sentenced for drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, then, you know, they coached me, and after that, I made my second documentary that you mentioned just now, which is Aku Siapa, or Who Am I, mm-hmm. about the issue of tudung in Malaysia. The documentary is discussing about the lived realities of women or girls in Malaysia who wear tudung because of various reasons. Some, of course, you know, out of their own choice and free will. Mm-hmm. Some are being harassed, or some are being pressured into wearing one, or being forced into wearing tudung. And then I interviewed some women who have taken off their tudung and asked them, you know, what are the reasons for them to take it off. And apart from the lived realities, the documentary also highlight about the history. When did the wearing of tudung became popular in Malaysia, and who popularized it? And what are the theological arguments around the issue of hijab or the issue of tudung? Yeah, so the documentary tries to look at it from various perspectives. Yeah.
And I think you interviewed a whole range of people, you know, from also, I mean, the women themselves, the religious authorities themselves, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, some religious scholars, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because in Malaysia, the way it's being presented to the public is that wearing tudung is compulsory or wajib, mm-hmm. and that's it, full stop. Sometimes, you know, people can't even ask, or sometimes those who ask are, you know, seen like, why do you ask? You know, like as if like your faith is being questioned. Yeah, but it's fine to ask, you know. And because as has been presented in my documentary, you know, during the interviews with various scholars, there were diversities of opinion amongst the classical scholars on the issue of hijab. So there are differences of opinion, there are diversity of views, but these have rarely been presented to the public. Yeah.
And I guess what sort of feedback did you get from that film?
Naturally, some were upset and not happy with it, but there were many because I screened it more than 30 times all over Malaysia.
Wow.
In various universities, in various groups. And most of the feedback, either for many of the audience, is the first time that they heard all these diversity of opinion regarding the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And for even for women who are wearing hijab, they, I know after the screening, they came to me and said that they really appreciate the information because they say, you know, I just wear it because, you know, people ask me to, or my husband asked me to, or my father asked me to. But now, you know, she understands what it's all about, the history behind the wearing of hijab in Malaysia especially,
mm-hmm.
you know, and basically, indirectly, it is the history of the conservative Islamization in Malaysia, yeah.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, do you identify as a feminist?
Yes, I do.
And why is it important for you to do so?
Well, because people, you know, sometimes, especially guys, they ask, or the question is, what else do women want? You know, like you guys, you women have everything, you know, but no, there are still a lot of discrimination. For example, on the issue of in the Sharia court today, you know, like, or in the law or in some of the judges, they still regard women as a lesser, their testimony is not as valid as a testimony of men, you know, mm-hmm. The popular saying or what do you call it, as far as the jurisprudence, Islamic jurisprudence is concerned, some, you know, many people of religious background still hold of this opinion that women's testimony is half of men's testimony. But, I mean, if that kind of thinking is still prevalent, imagine how much do they look down on women. Yeah, whereas in Malaysia, we have women ministers, we have women governors, and yet that kind of mindset prevail. And especially now on the issue of incest issue rape, you know, fathers raping their own daughters. How do you reconcile with that? Because especially the religious people, they only give warning to girls or to women, oh, you know, you have to cover yourself, you don't walk at night, you don't do this. Basically, all the teaching is about restricting women's movement, restricting women's choices, you know, what they want to wear and when they can walk around. But really, the teaching is to focus on boys or on men, you know, like do not disturb women, do not harass women, whatever that she wear, you know, in whatever circumstances, you respect women,
mm-hmm.
do not harass, do not touch women, do not whatever, you know, do sexual harassment, or especially do not rape women or do not rape girls.
Yeah, and I mean, the very recent case of the father who was charged for sodomizing his daughter mm-hmm. over 600 times,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
online people were commenting, oh, the daughter liked it, that's why she never complained, you know, and now because the two
it's
sisters...
It's disgusting, isn't it?
It's disgusting, yeah, you know, now because the two sisters are coming,
yeah,
she's...
It's sadistic, disgusting, and it shows, you know, it's such a sad state of affair amongst the mindset in Malaysia. The more so-called Islamic Malaysia is, why is it that we become so obsessed about sex? And that's the thing, you see, because the culture of blaming the women, mm-hmm. if there is zina or if there is, rape cases, and even a father raping the daughter is being blamed. Isn't that sick? It's a very sick society,
Yeah. And Yati, I mean, you know, you're no stranger to criticism and abuse yourself. You know, I mean, bringing up these kind of topics that are, well, they're difficult to discuss and people don't like to discuss it. How have you kind of dealt with the vitriol that's sometimes, you know, thrown your way?
Well, for me, when we become activists, you know how it is in Malaysia, you know, activists are being harassed, you know, like Siti Kasim, you know, I think in a few days' time, there is a court case because she lodged a police report against this guy who on Facebook do a rallying call to kill her, and all the comments on Facebook, you know, want to throw acid at her,
yeah.
and want to rape. Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing in Malaysia, you know, activists, we face this kind of challenges.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, we also believe that truth will prevail, that, you know, in Malay we say, you know, berani kerana benar, and we hope that the law, you know, will deliver justice and really punish those people who threat and who wants to harm people. But as for, if just, let's say, insult and, you know, say that whatever, yeah, this is part of it, but doesn't mean that we won't defend ourselves, you know, if when it comes to it, yeah.
Yeah, I saw one website, Apa Lagi Yati Mau.
That article is very funny. I screened it in a university here in KL.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only like, I can't remember, maybe about 20 people. It's not that, you know, because it's part of a university thing. But the invitation probably went out to public. So during the Q&A, nobody actually complained or... But there were, like, there was a one guy sit at the back. Nobody knew who he was, but, you know, but if he's, you know, so it's fine. And suddenly, the woman leader of this Islamic organization wrote this article. First of all, she herself was not there. She herself did not watch that screening or that movie. And number two, if whoever, you know, that conveyed it to her was not happy about the documentary, about the film, why didn't you speak up during the Q&A session? There's nobody criticized it. For me, it's just a very coward way of, you know, and that's the thing. They refuse to engage.
Mm-hmm. With you directly, right?
Yeah, they refuse to engage. The cause of violence, for example, is the inability to engage in a civil discussion or in a civil discourse. Mm-hmm. Like, if you do not agree, articulate it well. You know, articulate it, why you do not agree. But because they can't articulate their disagreement or their thoughts, then they resort to character assassination, you know, like ad hominem attacks or even violence, like how they threaten Siti Kasim, you know?
Yeah.
Because they can't refute. They basically, sometimes they don't even have the knowledge to disagree. You know, they just know, oh, I don't agree with you, I don't like you, and that's it. You know, they don't even have any arguments why they don't agree with something.
I'm speaking today to Nohayati Kaprawi. She's a filmmaker and also a women's rights activist. And we've been discussing her work so far, but coming up after this quick break, we'll discuss her new film, which is called Diary for Prasanna. You're listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. On the line with me today is Nohayati Kaprawi. She's a filmmaker and a women's rights activist. And we are about to discuss Diary for Prasanna, a film which Nohayati made, which is actually going to be screened at the Freedom Film Festival. And it highlights one of the higher profile cases involving unilateral conversion, that of Indira Gandhi and her ex-husband. Yati, maybe for those unfamiliar with Indira's story, could you share that with us?
Indira Gandhi, I mean, she's a Hindu. Mm-hmm. And about 8 years ago, perhaps, or 9 years ago, her husband, who was a Hindu, converted into Islam. And later on, you know, based on my interview with Indira Gandhi, mm-hmm. you know, she and her children as well, you know, apparently there's one day they had a fight, and then the husband then just grabbed the youngest child, who is Prasanna, you know, the title of this documentary,
yeah.
Prasanna, and then just grabbed her and just took her away on a motorbike. And then, of course, Indira, as the mother, lodged a police report. And after that, she saw Prasanna again once at the court, if I'm mistaken, at the court. Mm-hmm. But after that, for the last 7 years, she has never met Prasanna again. The husband never brought Prasanna to her again. Until today, she has been up and down, you know, courts so many times to even to meet Prasanna. Even that is being denied of her. And apart from that is the issue of the other two children who live with Indira. Because when the husband converted into Islam, first he not only he got custody from the Sharia court of the youngest child, Prasanna. Mm-hmm. So he got custody of Prasanna from the Sharia court. And he also converted the other two children who are living with Indira, and converted, basically he converted all the three children into Islam. But as far as the other two children, and now both of them are above 18, as far as they are concerned, they say that, you know, they believe in Hinduism. So that is the conflict now, you know, which we were hoping that in the parliament the other day could have resolved with amending the certain acts, but it was not done.
Yeah, because I mean, just to set the facts straight, he converted them without Indira or the children's knowledge, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Indira, you know, after this very long and bitter custody battle, I mean, because she did gain custody in our federal court, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct, yes.
And mm-hmm. But then...
In the Ipoh High Court, I think.
Ipoh High Court, sorry. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But and she was granted custody of Prasanna as well, but her husband never complied, and till today nothing has actually, no action has been taken against him.
Yeah, yeah. And there was an instruction by the court for the head of police to arrest the husband, mm-hmm. so that the husband hand over Prasanna to her. Mm-hmm. But then the IGP or the head of police said that, he has two court orders, one from the Sharia court and one from the civil court. And he said, he doesn't know what to do, so he doesn't want to take any action. But as per reminded by Indra's lawyer, YB Kula, yep. That the IGP is, he has to follow the federal court orders. He has to follow the order of the civil court.
But that has not happened, obviously.
That has not happened. But, putting the law aside, even if you ask a child, who doesn't know anything about law or doesn't have any all this thinking about this religion or what religion, just ask a basic question to a child. Is it right that a mother or a child is being separated from his or her mother for 7 years? Any child will say, no, that's not right. That, it's unjust and it's just inhumane. So, why is it just because now it's clouded or shrouded by law, by the legalities and by religious issues, and suddenly, is trying to justify that it's okay to for a mother to be denied to even see her daughter for 7 years, since the daughter was a baby, 11 months old, when the husband took her away. And now the daughter is, Prasanna is 8 years old.
We mentioned the act just now, the law reform to the Marriage and Divorce mm-hmm. Bill. What mm-hmm. actually would the amendment have ensured?
The amendment was supposed to ensure that both parents have a say, meaning that, that have consultation and both parents agree on the religion of the child. And also the proposal is that, if I'm not mistaken, first of all, is that the child should remain in the religion before the one of the parent conversion. Mm-hmm. How do you say? That the child should
remain in the religion of the parents during their marriage, right? Prior
correct.
To the
yes,
conversion.
Correct.
Yeah, unless mm-hmm. unless both spouses agree to convert their child to Islam and then also yes, subject correct. To the child's wishes upon turning 18, if I'm not
yes,
mistaken.
Upon turning 18, correct. Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable thing to do. Even if, let's say, before they turn 18, but if both parents agree to a certain decision, why not? But the thing is, only one parent gets to decide. So in this case, as if like the mother has no say at all, has totally lost her right to make any intervention at all. That is not right.
Yeah. And like you said, she's not even seen her child. As a mother myself, I can't imagine not being able to see my own child for 7 years because of all these legalities that have been forced upon me.
Yep. For the police to arrest, even to get the husband to bring the child for her to see the child. Is that so difficult?
Yeah. When did you first come across Indra's story and, what kind of drew you to it?
Actually, I'm the director for this documentary, but the producer is Datuk Zaid Ibrahim. Mm-hmm. So it was Datuk Zaid Ibrahim who called me up and he expressed his concern about this issue. And so because he knew that I have done documentaries on women's issues and human rights issues before, mm-hmm. so then he approached me. But it is Datuk Zaid Ibrahim, it is his idea to do this documentary.
Okay. And I guess then what perspective does the film take on? Who are the people being featured and whose stories are we actually hearing in the documentary?
I think because for many Malaysian, because they read this case in the newspaper or just in the news, normally it's just outside the court, the interviews outside the court by the journalists.
Yeah.
So this documentary just invite the audience to know Indra a bit more personally and also the children. And, even for me as the filmmaker, when I meet Indra, I felt so humbled because she is such a great woman, very big-hearted. Mm-hmm. First of all, she doesn't have any, I'm sure she regrets what has happened and I'm sure she's upset with what has happened, but she does not express a bitterness and she also does not bring up her child to hate the father. Both of the child, they don't express of hating the father or having, negative feelings. Of course, that they wish that the father bring back their sister, mm-hmm. And especially like the son, he's very mature for his age, And he said, you know, if only the father, you know, called them up or, you know, that they go out for lunch and have a discussion, you know, like heart-to-heart talk. And he said that he believes that any problems could be resolved if just sit down and have, you know, a very calm and civil discussion. So for me, like, if the son, if the children can say that, can have that kind of attitude and perspective, why can't the father, who is supposed to be, you know, like, the person who teach good values to the kids? I don't understand.
And I think I read that Indra's mother herself is also, you know, we don't hear much about her, but she's featured in this film.
Yeah, I mean, because she was the one who took care of Prasanna when Prasanna was born. Until, you know, I mean, apart from Indra, her mother took care of the baby. So the mother said that that's her wish, is that at least to see Prasanna once, you know, even for once, she said she would, that's her wish.
How did you go about with the filmmaking process? I mean, how long did it take you to complete? Did you kind of follow them around? Were you like a fly on the wall? Is it that sort of, is it that kind of themed?
Not exactly. I mean, but I went to their house a few times, mm-hmm. and I followed, I filmed Indra when she went to court several times.
Right.
And the last one was when she went to the parliament. So I filmed her when she was at the parliament. But the whole duration, it took me about 1 year because the court case, you know, sometimes it takes a few months lapse in between court case, court hearings. And so, yeah, it was, I started this project. I mean, Datuk Zaid Ibrahim approached me about a year ago. So it's about 1 year.
It's about 1 year. Okay. And I mean, you know, what is it you think about the documentary genre that actually kind of brings social justice stories to life?
I think documentary, first of all, because it's real, you know, it's real people, mm-hmm. and as if like we bring the camera in, like the camera is like a representative, like to bring the audience to know these people, you know, whoever the characters in the documentary, to know them a bit more intimate, and to know their feelings and not just what they normally say in the media, you know, because in the media normally it's just quite short interview, mm-hmm. but now you can see them in their home, you know, how their interactions with their family and the difficulties that the challenges that they face, you know, for example, like for Indra, you know, she lives in Ipoh, so every time there's a court case, she has to come down in KL. So, you know, so in the documentary, I followed her from her house, which she left the house about 4:30 in the morning. Wow. Yeah, then she came to Kuala Lumpur. Yeah, so meaning that, you know, that there's a real person behind the case or the story.
The news reports that we read, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we just try to understand the human side of the case or the human side of the law. Actually, you know, when people debate about the law, when people say, "Oh, I don't agree with this law." This is not just something abstract, you know. It has real impact on real people. And let's meet the people, you know. Let's meet them and don't just as if like, you know, there's empty, there's no faces behind it.
And, you know, because the other two children are also being featured in this. I mean, we don't really hear much about them in the media as well. I guess, you know, it's kind of showing that, I'm assuming it's also showing the impact of losing their sister, you know, not just the mother's struggle, but also the sibling struggle, the grandmother's struggle, you know, all, how their sister and their daughter was just stolen away from them, literally.
Yeah, I mean, that's true because especially like the daughter, because in the documentary, you can see her, how upset she was when she recalled the incident. Mm-hmm. Because when the father took the younger sister, it was she who was holding Prasanna at that time. So the father grabbed it from her. So until today, you know, she feels guilty about it. As she somehow or rather she blamed herself for it. And I mean, it's so sad to see a child, I mean, at that time she was a child, to feel guilty for losing a sister. It's not her fault at all. But these are some of the things that the public do not know. And of course, as far as they are concerned, because it's very, very personal to them, because it's about their own faith. So the government wants to decide, or the government or the law or, you know, the authorities wants to decide what religion they are. Yeah, but what about them themselves, you know? Like, even in Islam, all of us, I mean, being a Muslim, every Muslims know that you can't enforce or you can't force faith on people, you know? That's very basic.
Did you make any other surprising discoveries while filming this documentary?
But for me, as I mentioned, you know, I mean, I'm very humbled to meet them, to be able to meet them, you know, to know them better. Mm-hmm. And I'm humbled to see their big-heartedness, you know, they're very, what do you call it? Yeah, I mean, for them to be able to move on with their life, you know, and of course they face up to the challenges, they go through, you know, whatever challenges that they have to face, but not in a very detrimental to their own emotion or, you know, meaning that as the children say, you know, if only the father meet them, you know, they can talk things out, you know, like they don't hate their father. And it's great that Indra brought up her children that way. And for, you know, I think Indra is a very big hearted. And there are some things that she said in the interview that I said to her, I wish that she can actually give a workshop. You know, because for me, like, you don't need to be a very religious, well, religious in the sense of authority, you know, like, to be a religious authority to really understand religion. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if you have conscience, you know what is right and what is wrong.
Do you consider yourself a feminist filmmaker as well? And I mean, if so, you know, what sort of responsibilities came with producing a film from a feminist perspective?
Yeah, first of all, the documentary that I made before this was a film about a female ulama in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. It was for NHK Japan. So, I mean, for me, apart from highlighting the problems that women face, but also I try to empower other women who watch the documentary, meaning that in Indra's case, of course, she faced problems. But look how her strength, her resilience in fighting for her case. You know, that's why, meaning that women who face difficult circumstances should not just play victim in the sense that play victim and don't do anything about it. No, we must fight for our right, and Indra is fighting for her right. So I hope her struggle empower other women as well.
I guess so. That's kind of what you're hoping the documentary will achieve, you know, that it will reach more people, you know, to hear Indra's story herself from her, I mean, you know, from the horse's mouth as it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And she will be there during the screening. So whoever would like to engage with her, you know, feel free to attend the screening.
Are you planning on continuing to raise awareness around this issue of unilateral conversion and its impact on the families involved? Is that a...
I think because the court cases are still ongoing, so I do believe that the media will keep on highlighting this issue. And of course, the tabling of
the law reform
act is not over yet, you know, because they might retable in future. So, you know, it's I mean, with or without me, the issue will still be discussed, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Yati. Any last message you'd like? Any last message you'd like to use?
A bit of advertisement.
Sure.
So I mean, please. I mean, whoever is interested to watch the documentary or meet Indra herself, is going to be screened on 9th of September at 5:45 PM at Live Art Center Jaya 1, Petaling Jaya.
Okay, all right. And the Freedom Film Festival actually kicks off on the 2nd of September and runs right up to the 9th of September. There are many, many wonderful films that will be screened. So you need to head to freedomfilm.my to find out more. And to gain admission to all events, and there are plenty of them, as we said, you must register to be a friend of the festival. Registration is free and can be done again online at freedomfilm.my. And as Yati mentioned, Diary for Prasanna will be screened on Saturday, the 9th of September at 5:45 PM. And will there be a Q&A after that?
Yes, with Indra herself.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Thank you so much, Yati. I've been speaking to Nohayati Kaprawi. She's a filmmaker and women's rights activist, and we were discussing Diary for Prasanna, a film that gives us a glimpse into the life of Indira Gandhi, who has not seen her daughter for many, many years and who is in an ongoing custody battle with her ex to get her child back. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.